Hello and welcome. I'm Haney.
I'm Alexander.
And I'm Simon.
We are knee-deep in tech, covering the latest from the IT industry, with a specific focus on Microsoft and how to get actual value from technology. This is episode 308, dealing with the uncertainties of American cloud services. You will be able to find this and our previous episodes on kneedeepintech.com, iTunes, Spotify, and on most podcasting platforms.
And if this experiment falls in good stead, also on YouTube. I think we're going to need updates.
Yes. We need to update that.
Yeah, the intro. If again, this works, because it's different to do things with video.
So on that, Are there any European alternatives to YouTube?
Oh, I was about to say Napster,
no.
I don't think that's Pirate Bay.
Yeah, pretty much.
Oh.
No, yeah. Are there any? Do you remember Vimeo? I think
it's
that
still,
was
oh, it's yeah, still yeah. there. Yeah, but I think Vimeo is more of like an actual enterprisey YouTube version. Mm. So it's not open the way YouTube is.
Yeah. You can share with a password and stuff like that. I think.
Right. Mm-hmm. No, because that's the only alternative to YouTube I can think of at all.
Yeah, true. Yeah.
But we're not here to talk about YouTube. I really don't know where to start this. Let's start with the blog post, because that's the reason where we're having this conversation. So for full transparency, all of us are heavily invested in the Microsoft ecosystem. Of course, that's what we have done our entire lives. It doesn't say that we don't like other things and that we are impossible to work with when it comes to any other technologies, but we are Microsoft MVPs as well. So we might be slightly biased. But I also think it gives us a quite unique insight into what's going on inside of Microsoft, and we can draw our own conclusions of that. Brad Smith, whatever his title is nowadays.
Your golf buddy, right?
No. That's Brad Anderson.
Oh.
So slightly different and slightly different. He is vice chair and president of Microsoft. Sorry, it's all of these vice general presidents. We'll be talking about presidents shortly, too. But Brad Smith did a speech in Brussels just about a week ago, and after that announced a blog post with the headline, Microsoft announces new European digital commitments. We'll talk through parts of this blog post during this episode, but what we wanted to talk about is how does all of these things that goes on in the US from a political point of view, that goes on in Sweden, probably in Finland and in many other parts of Europe too, affects the way we work, the way we think about Microsoft, and what happens if Trump pulls the plug. So let's start with Haney, because I'm very much aware of how it works and people speak about it in Sweden. But in the IT industry in Finland, what do you talk about in terms of what's happening in the States?
At the moment, it's, you know, like a curious conversation at lunch or over coffee or things like that. But it hasn't really yet, at least, sunk into maybe like real concerns about cloud platforms and things like that. So on that regard, things are mostly going as usual. Of course, there's always people who are more concerned about the status of things and maybe have been already even before everything went on. And things like that, but that's maybe where it's at the moment.
And Alex,
how
what's
about
your
in Sweden?
Yeah, what's your thoughts, Alex? What do you hear and what do you talk about?
So I work mostly down on the continent, but I have a couple of Swedish clients as well, and I think it's the same as Haney described it. Everybody knows that it doesn't really matter what happens. We are up shit creek with no paddle. There is no way to, in the short or even the medium term, to exit American hyperscalers, AWS, Google, Oracle, Azure. You cannot just up and leave without enormous change. Mm-hmm. And those are the simple ones. Mm-hmm. Office 365. That is an order of magnitude more complicated because that is so much more people facing. Mm-hmm. So everybody knows that we're in uncharted territory, and everybody knows that we are now looking at a world that just 6 months ago was completely off the charts what do you call these four quadrants when you do a...
Gartner.
not a Gartner. some kind of analysis to figure out... opportunities, SWOT analysis. Oh. This was so far on the enormous impact, but extremely low probability. It wasn't even on there. Now we are here, and nobody saw it coming, and nobody has any preparation for it. And that's where we're at. We're all sort of kind of sitting with popcorn because we don't have a choice.
Yeah. I think it's interesting because this discussion, actually in Sweden at least, started several years ago with the Schrems 2. What's the name of it?
Schrems?
yeah.
Not the safe harbor.
That when you do something in court and get a result.
A court decision.
Yeah, thank you. So this all started with the Schrems 2 court decision a couple of years ago, where a lot of hyperscalers had to change the way they use data from the EU in the light of executive orders and new laws in the US. That spun off a huge discussion, especially in Sweden, but also in Denmark and in Germany, on should we use American cloud services or not? 2 years passed, we saw a lot of attempts to actually do something good with this. And then we had a new commitment with the US on how to protect European data. And then the presidential election happened, and now we're back to an even worse case scenario, I would say. Because previously it was, doing air quotes for the ones that are listening to this, only data or personal data or the... possibility of the secret or I'm losing words today. Intelligence services in the US to steal data. Now it's more about what happens if we get huge tariffs on American cloud services, or if someone decides, let's cut the power to the American cloud services until Europe behaves. Which is, of course, the worst alternative, and we'll get back to that. But that's where we are today, and that, of course, creates a lot of discussions on how to do this. And there are a lot of people in the community that are absolutely convinced that we can move away from American cloud services and build similar services within Europe.
I absolutely agree. Of course we can. I mean, there's nothing magical with anything that the American hyperscalers have done. We can absolutely do that. It's only going to take about a decade and an untold amount of billions.
Yeah.
But hey, of course it can be done.
Yeah. So should we?
Yeah.
Oh, now you're asking the right question, because I think the initial premise of this episode was this whole America reaffirms, or Microsoft reaffirms, the commitment to Europe that we are going to say no to the government if they ask us to do something that will harm Europe. Mm-hmm. My immediate reaction, and full disclaimer, I've never come anywhere close to any legal training at all. I have a lot of opinions, but nothing... proper.
I was just about to say, how's that different? But
very
sorry to all the legal people listening.
Fair. But no, what I'm getting at is it doesn't matter in the slightest, because Microsoft is still an American company. And as long as the data centers are owned by an American entity, well, then the government says jump and Microsoft simply asks how high. That's the end of it. Now, there are two other data center operators. One is the government. The U.S. government has its own mm-hmm. Azure cloud. And I'm pretty sure that those are going to be under the thumb of the administration. But there's a third one. That's China. 21 Vianet. That's a complete Chinese entity that runs Azure in China. That is completely different. And that is the one part of Azure at this specific moment that I don't think that Microsoft can really touch. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I have to say, I would actually be really interesting to understand the legal side, that how does it work? Like, if you really have all your data stored in Europe, mm-hmm. is there this right that they can pretty much get your customer data if it is, you know, it's you're not a American company yourself or anything like that, and not even having operations in the US, for example?
But that's
do they still have the right?
That's the problem right there. They do not have the right. That's what Schrems, for instance, mm-hmm. asserted.
Yeah.
But it doesn't matter because Trump has shown that he does not care about these small details like courts. So all the rules are out the window. But I think that is the scary part.
But I according to the community members and loud voices of this discussion and the European sovereignty side of things, and that's also how I interpret the executive orders and the laws that are there, an American company can be ordered by the government to mm-hmm. give data to the American government from whatever data source that they operate. So if NSA, to take the most common example, asks Microsoft, we need this data from this individual, which might be a European citizen, but the theory is that that person can be under investigation for things like terrorism in the US, and then Microsoft needs to be able to provide that information to NSA. Microsoft, of course, claim that they have never, ever, without legal rights, done so. But that's also part of these laws and executive orders that they're not allowed to disclose if they have done anything else.
Yeah.
So that's exactly the argument that a lot of these data sovereignty people have. And they, of course, see a greater risk of the US government abusing this, especially. Or, mm-hmm. of course, interfering with people's rights to integrity and data integrity. And we can talk, like, this is a completely different discussion if that should be legal at all. But that's the theory around it. So I think we have two paths to go down here, and I think both of them will lead us back to the blog post. One is the data control, data access, and the thing that I think that we could focus more on today is what happens if you pull the plug on Microsoft and the likelihood of that actually happening. And what would happen if Microsoft actually does what they say that we'll do in the blog post? They say no. What would the American government do? And we shouldn't go way too far into Black Mirror mode here. But hey, let's start there. So what would happen?
Nobody knows. I mean, we can't even speculate. We are so far off the map. It's not even mm-hmm. funny. It's literally nobody has a clue, which is kind of scary in and of itself. Mm-hmm. I mean, could they shut down the company? Yes, of course they could. But what would the consequences mm-hmm. be? Because Microsoft is such an integral part of
everything.
Well, everything. Yeah. Literally everything. So can they? Yes. Legally, probably not. Doesn't matter. See above? No. So, but would it make sense? No. I don't know. I have no idea.
So on the other hand then, Haney, do your customers have a plan for what happens if a data center goes down for whatever reason or an entire data center region? That's some the first do. Question. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. We have some another do. Question later
where,
on. Yeah,
some where do. There is like critical workloads that have been identified that they need to run no matter what happens. Yes. Mm-hmm. And yes.
Do any of both of your customers have multi-cloud? So do they have a fallback to another cloud provider or an on-prem data center for the matter?
More likely the second option, mm-hmm. but they are few and far between mm-hmm. because mm-hmm. the idea of the multi-cloud, I think that's going to change because previously it's been a great idea on paper, but in reality, it's been a pain in the ass because mm-hmm. you literally have to have two completely different environments because the whole idea that we were sold that Terraform is going to work perfectly across clouds.
And Kubernetes.
Yeah,
no.
Yeah. So it's a hassle. Mm-hmm. And the perceived value of that mm-hmm. was not high enough. I think that has changed. And I think the question now becomes, where do I put stuff if I can't put it in one of the American hyperscalers?
Yeah, also, I think there's the aspect that there might be multi-cloud companies, but is there an ability to actually fall back mm-hmm. to another cloud if, you know, things go south? Or is there an ability to actually, like, go back on-prem if all goes wrong? Mm-hmm. Because that's a whole nother part that, like, what do you actually do when things go sideways?
Mm-hmm. No, and it's so easy to get stuck on virtual machines. Mm-hmm. Those are easy. You can move those in a heartbeat, pretty much. And just look at the mass exodus from VMware at the moment. But that's an aside. But that's not the difficult part. The difficult part is stuff like the SaaS providers. Mm-hmm. Keep in mind Confluence, Jira. Where are those? United States. Where do you have Salesforce? United States. So, and those are so ingrained into everything you do that you cannot recreate it. You just can't. The whole idea of a large event-driven environment. You can't easily or even difficulty recreate it on-prem. You just can't.
But stupid question now, and then we'll get to the exit plans and other parts of this blog post. But you say you can't. Mm-hmm. But all of these clouds are built on actual data centers.
Sure.
So
what do I mean with you can't?
Exactly.
Very good question, and thank you for asking it because it forces me to be more clear. What I mean is a single company can't mm-hmm. realistically recreate something for themselves mm-hmm. because the price of that hardware is going to be astronomical compared to what you get out of it. The utilization is going to be super small. A national cloud could probably do it over time with enough money. But single companies, no, they're not going to have the money, the hardware, or the capability to mm-hmm. get the same functionality. Does that make sense?
Yeah, sure. And speaking about, before we head to the exit plan, because that's something that I spoke to a customer about today, but let's start with the sovereign services. So in this blog post, Microsoft mentioned that they're working with the French government together with Capgemini and Orange. And they're also working with the German government on sovereign cloud service that would be similar to what they currently have in China. Will that work? And how would that work?
You want to touch on this, Haney?
Yeah. Well, I've seen the Chinese cloud. I've touched it. It's not fully Azure, you know, the Azure that we know. Of course, like new capabilities, new features, things like that, they come at a completely different schedule over there. And that makes sense. And so I do think it can be successful. I do think it will be more successful in the context of Europe for some reason. Maybe I'm biased that, you know, we can do things over here. But, you know, it's not as maybe easy as it sounds. And it will be interesting to see, like, what are they aiming for in terms of, like, what services are available, what functionality is available. Like, does everything work and feel like the public Azure feels like? That wasn't really an answer, but, you know.
Yeah, but I think it were. And to Alexander, you have a friend who have written an excellent article on the topic. And I, especially in this context, why weren't Germany successful in doing this the last time they tried? Because Germany have tried to do this. Project Schwarzwald.
Schwarzwald, yes. The Black Forest.
Wonderful cake, by the way.
Way too sweet. And I never thought that I would say that. So the main problem that I think arose with Black Forest was the costs, because Deutsche Telekom, that was running essentially the same kind of cloud as the Chinese one, they had to have a what is it called, a margin over the licensing cost. And I think Joey mentioned a number, 35%. Yeah, 35% more than the standard pricing. So, yeah, why would you want to pay 35% more for the same thing? And that brings us to the next part. It's not the same thing. Just like Haney said, what it is a glorified Azure stack. It's a big ass Azure stack, but it's still an Azure stack.
Azure local
stack. So that sort of kind of exposes the biggest issue of sovereign clouds. What's the point of a cloud if it's not interoperability? If it's not interoperative? Interoperable? Yeah, let's go with that word. Because as soon as you are not on the same version, well, then you're down to the lowest common denominator, and that's where APIs come in. That's what an API is designed for. But hey, it kind of becomes orders of magnitude more complicated if you need to do it over a proper geographical scale.
And also to the point, because we have a lot of, but there are people in Europe, in many different countries, that claim that we should be investing billions and billions and billions and billions and billions of euros, or whichever currency you prefer, into building our own. How is it even possible that people were questioning a 35% margin on German cloud services in Germany when that's exactly what they wanted? It's like buying like ecological fruit. I want this that's better for my health, but I'm not prepared to pay more for it, even though the production cost is higher. Like, I have a very hard time swallowing that we should build this on our own because we'll save so much money and be sovereign, and we couldn't even pay for someone else to host this.
Yeah.
Sorry.
No, this is the technological equivalent of AliExpress or Temu. Everybody says, I'm going to buy local, and then they go off and buy shit on the internet. No, that's the reality of people. We might say one thing and do another.
And also it's, you know, being used to everything being convenient and relatively a specific price range. Mm. And then when it hops up, you're like, this didn't used to pay this much. So what is going on? And then I think even like if we look at people using Azure, and any cloud for that sake, is that we're always looking for the updates. When's that mm-hmm. one thing that is going to make my life easier? When is it coming in? So are we ready to wait a bit longer potentially to have that new capability in? Or even not have it in at all?
And that's exactly the second reason why Black Forest failed. Because it was its own thing. It was lagging behind. Mm-hmm. And it's enough that it lags behind a week and people start being mad.
Mm-hmm. So let's head back to the exit plan, because that's the new thing. You should have an exit strategy. And I have a friend at Microsoft Sweden who wrote an excellent article on why it should be called an exit plan, not an exit strategy. Because if you have an exit strategy, that is like, what would be the strategic part of the exit? I think that was a very well put blog post. I will see if I can find it later on. But an exit plan. And I had a discussion with a customer today about we need an exit plan for Microsoft 365. Okay, so let's start. The concept is, if we want or if we are forced to get out, how do we do it? What's our option? And I have a point that I will be making in a few minutes about that this isn't about technology, because I want to make it 100% clear. We have everything needed from a technology point of view to do everything that Microsoft does and more. In open source, on whichever platform you prefer, no question about it. That's not the problem. But let's start with the exit plan. Have you ever made an exit plan for any of the products you work with the intent of how do we get out?
No.
Not a proper one, no.
No.
Well, a little bit of a highlight of this is what could replace this mm-hmm. in environment XYZ.
I need to walk back on that, because every other day I think about an exit plan for Teams. but yeah.
It took us 5 years to exit OneNote.
Yes.
5 years.
Oh, is that why this whole debacle started?
OneNote.
Is that why the White House is so angry?
5 years ago, it was Trump.
Exactly.
That makes total sense. Sorry, our American listeners.
But no, I've never done a proper... I think it's a really, so let's go back a bit. I did a training many, many years ago on
business continuity.
Yes, business continuity, exactly. And one of the challenges that we were faced was, here, look at this completely cornerstone piece of technology. Figure out how to not use this. And everybody started with complete incredulity. Well, hey, that's like telling us we can't use power anymore. Mm-hmm. Can't be done. And that's the starting point. And that's essentially where we are right now. So if nothing else, it is a very useful mental exercise. But have I done it? No. Would I know where to start? No. Because as Simon said, it's not about technology. We could whip up... if you really hate yourself, you can start using the open data format tomorrow to step away from Word, for instance. It's a pain in the ass to use. It has nowhere near the same features as Word does. But it's not Microsoft, so it's not so much, does it do the job? Yes, it does. Will I need to relearn? Yes, it would mean me having to do that. And me being old and difficult, that's not going to happen. And I'm reasonably well-versed in technology compared to mm-hmm. most everybody else. And I think that's the point you want to make.
Yeah. Where would you start, Haney, with your exit plan? And like, it's very, like, we need to take an example.
Fabric.
Fabric, yeah. How would you exit Fabric? And you are not allowed to insert any other American cloud service.
So I guess it would be figuring out, like, can I have similar capabilities on-prem, for example, in some way? Well, I can run a Spark cluster on-prem in a Kubernetes cluster. That's one option. And I can still, you know, use my notebooks and stuff like that. There are kind of course, in Fabric, then you have these, like, where you store your data. You have the one lake and then the Metastore layer. You know, we have on-prem storage systems that support, you know, blob data. So, for example, Minio is out there. There are other S3 compatible storage systems as well. So figuring out what are you going to replace that with? And then, like, what is the Metastore? Then depending on what do you use in Fabric, something like pipelines.
Reflex, well, as you mentioned previously.
Yeah. So it's like there's not an identical service, but you can find something similar, like Airflow, or there are even libraries in Python that you can use to kind of make similar kinds of pipelines and stuff like that. You know, you could get it done, but, you know, the amount of time that would go into setting up the environment, configuring it, ensuring it is secure. Like, I get why they're having difficulty with some of the security features in Fabric, because if one had to set up that in their own environment, it would be really difficult, even just for one company. But of course, they're trying to make an enterprise-ready platform, so of course it should be there. But that's another story. So, you know, bringing the different bits and pieces together, and then how do you manage it? How do you make updates? How do you monitor it? We're used to, you know, having, you have monitoring views, you have automated configuring of logging. You just click some buttons and your logging goes into the right place. And you don't have any of that. So you have to configure all of that as well. So,
Where do you find the people to run this?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's my point. Like, and another, I think it was some French government agency that did a thought experiment where they claim that if Europe lowers the usage of American cloud services by 5%, we'll create 178,000 jobs. We are currently lacking 70,000 people within cybersecurity in Europe or something like that. I might be saying the wrong, but regardless, we have such a hard time to get people to work in IT as it is today. How do you convince 178,000 Europeans to work with Linux? Because that's the option.
And configuring networking.
Yeah, exactly. Configure physically. Networking. Everyone needs to learn Kubernetes.
Yeah.
This, like, and like, I'm not saying that anything of the products we have mentioned are bad. They are great. No, no. I love Linux.
Great.
They do fantastic things. The challenge is that this will take generations to first find the people that are willing to invest, find the people that are skilled enough in the technology and also can teach this to, like, go out and multiply because we will need it.
We need cloning.
Retrain people. And, like, it's, I think we have the money. I don't think that's where we should be investing money if you look at European sovereignty and security today. I think there are way better ways to spend that money and in the environment or whatever. Sorry for my soapbox moment. I've been holding this back for years and now Alexander decides to do video and this happens. I would love to have a Swedish Azure, a real Swedish Azure.
That would be
but
awesome.
But it's simply not possible for human reasons.
It's possible, but not, what's the word, feasible?
Yeah.
So I'm gonna go. Well, it depends.
Of course.
So I agree with you. If we're looking at day to day people, normal people facing systems to compare to Azure, AWS, or Google. But I absolutely think that we should very immediately build a proper sovereign capability to run national level things, military, government stuff. That shit should not be in Azure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it should never have been there. Never, ever. I remember when we first started to talk about these kinds of clouds, and me and Alexander, we live in Linköping. We have the defense manufacturer Saab here. We know and have known since day one that there are things that they have that will never, ever, and should never, ever be in American cloud services. Or, nor in Danish, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
That's another stone we can turn at a later date. We know that. And I do think that there are reasons to have a sovereign cloud, a sovereign government cloud. And there are plans to do that. But for 99% of everything that goes on in Sweden, it works great to use Azure or AWS or GCP.
Do you know what we're coming back to? We're coming back to the one thing that nobody does.
InfoSec.
Classifying information and classifying your workloads.
True.
Because if you can properly classify your workloads, then your choices become much easier compared to waking up one Tuesday morning when there is a complete madness going on in the US and suddenly your choices have been made for you and you are hopelessly behind the eight ball.
So let's start to summarize these things. let's start. Microsoft claims in this blog post, which we'll go back to, they will strengthen Europe's economic competitiveness. They will help and protect Europe from a cyber defense and legal point of view. They claim that they will be supporting local government clouds. Do all of these things. And it's great. And I just need to mention that there were no one in the pictures from when President Trump got president from Microsoft. All the other hyperscalers were there in pictures. Microsoft had made a statement, not necessarily something that is nothing other than a statement. But my view, I love everything they say in this blog post. It doesn't change much. That's my opinion. And I'm sorry to say it, but to your point, Alexander, it doesn't change too much. But I simply don't think we have a choice. And then, regardless of being very European and whining on why we didn't do the right thing 40 years ago, let's just play where we are today, do the best of it, focus on sovereign cloud services where they should be, instead of trying to move everything into something we possibly can't build. In probably my career. And I might be wrong. 30 years from now, someone might throw this in my face, but I don't think that's likely to happen.
Come and solve everything and build that for us.
Did you have to go there, Haney?
Yes, of course.
Of course you did.
We haven't even talked about that.
It's this saying that you lie in the bed you made.
Yeah.
And stop whining about the fact that you crapped the bed and deal with it.
Focus on defense, oil, electronic components. Like, we can continue with things that I think would be better to invest in than digital sovereignty. And
not
I know that there
Bitcoin.
Are people. Not Bitcoin. What's your thoughts to summarize this, Haney?
Yeah, I think it's a really interesting topic and something that we cannot know for sure, like, where are we going? So it's one of those topics that it's really good to keep an eye on. I actually think the point that Alexander made, that one should really like label data and label the services that we use and know what's the criticality and what would happen if something goes wrong. And kind of start with the ones that are really critical and figure out plans for those. But as said, I totally agree with you, Simon. There, you know, we cannot get everything running in our lifetime. At least that's how it seems to me at the moment. So
maybe in yours, not in mine.
Oh, yeah, true. I have a bit more time. Maybe, hopefully.
Well, that depends on your turn. Yeah, exactly. You might have an Apple CPU, Alexander, so it will work longer than our sheep.
True.
I was about to say a country CPUs, but I won't go there. Mm-hmm. Let's do sovereign phones and see what happens first.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I would also be... I will totally sidestep that because I have no idea what you're talking about.
As you should.
But I am also really interested if our listeners have some, you know, ideas and thoughts you want to also share with us. It's such an interesting and multifaceted topic that it's just,
And please, if you do not agree with the things we have said, if you see another way forward, if you think that we should be investing in it, it's technically human possible to do this, reach out. We would be happy to listen to you and hear what you have to say. So we look forward to any feedback. And like, that's one of the reasons why I keep on following people with very different opinions on this question on LinkedIn. Yeah. Because I think we should challenge the way we see things. But on this path, I have a hard time seeing it's succeeding.
Indeed.
That felt good. We might get back to this topic and hopefully we get feedback on this. Comment on YouTube and on the other platforms where this will be published. We'll try to, and if you have good options, European options to YouTube, please let us know and we can happily post there as long as it's cheaper than the equivalent American cloud service. Sorry.
And not 35%. Yeah, let's not go there. No. So next week, we will be back with an interview. That's going to be an audio-only interview because we recorded that before we came up with this crazy idea of doing video with a dear friend of mine, Elin, from Zington, a data engineering company in Stockholm. So we're going to be talking about data engineering. How do you get into data engineering? And how did she end up in data engineering? All the options. So stay tuned for that episode in a week. And until then, thank you for listening. Thank you for viewing. See you next week. Bye-bye.
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 Thank you for listening to this episode of Native in Tech. Native in Tech is a weekly technology podcast hosted by Alexander Arvidsson, Simo Binder, and Heini Ilmarinen. If you have any feedback, questions, or would like to be part of an episode, please reach out to us on social media or via email at podcast@nativeintech.com.